Yeah, I may did. How embarrassing.
We're gonna do a rolling start. Hell yeah. What is going on, everyone? It's Rob and Johnny. Welcome to episode 57 of the MM Arcade podcast. We were having a bit of a joke about whose internet was at fault. Turned out to be mine. But Rob, stop making fun of me. We hit 31,000 subscribers.
We would have had this episode out 2 days prior.
Oh, no, not 2 days. One day. Don't get me started. It was one day. But Rob, 31K, brother. We hit it.
I know. You know, a little bit more and I'm not going to have to fight anymore. You know, I'm not going to have to fight to earn the bread.
We might get there one day. That's exciting.
With you guys, new listeners, please sub. Support please the do. Feed. If you like what you're listening to. Otherwise, let's jump straight into it, mate.
And, dude, we're jumping straight into UFC 311. Yes, we're a couple of days removed now by the time this goes live, but we still want to share our reactions to all of the fights. Mm-hmm. Of course, starting off with that main event. Now, we haven't yet talked about the change in main event that happened at the last minute, and we can talk about that in a second. But what we ended up getting was not Islam Makhachev against Armin Tsarukyan. It was Islam Makhachev against Renato Moicano. Of course, Islam submitting Renato in the first round. Rob, what were your thoughts?
Mate, honestly, at this point in Islam's career, can you expect anything else? You know, everyone just wants to see the bubble pop. But much like Khabib, it's not gonna. I don't think. You know, Islam is so well rounded, much more well rounded than Khabib, in my opinion. He utilizes his strikings to open up his takedowns. His takedowns open up his striking. His striking is so crisp and clean. We have seen such an improvement in his striking over the course of the fighters, over the course of his last few fights. And it was no different. You know, obviously everybody stood up when he went down. The announcement team said that they looked closely. It was a slip. You know, I didn't see the recording, but I assume it was a slip. It didn't look like he got clipped.
It was a slip. I double checked. It is.
He didn't stand up looking like he got clipped, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, the thing that I want to highlight is because – he was always going to get a takedown, in my opinion.
Mm.
But how fast he cinched up that head now, the Das.
Yeah.
And how quickly Moicano tapped. And it's not just Moicano, it's every other jiu-jitsu black belt that he's come across in the octagon has tapped so fast. And that it can only lend itself. And you see that he even does it differently. Like he grabs his own forearm.
Yeah.
Not the bicep. And his back just kind of molds like a mutant. Like he starts choking it with his back. You know what I mean? And it looks so cool when you watch it in slow-mo because you see his back just flex out. It's wild. But, man, his squeeze must be on another level.
Yeah. As soon as he cinched it in, and the way that he did it as well, like oft, sometimes with submissions, you don't quite know, is it in properly yet? Like we see that often with guillotines and whatnot. As soon as he did this, and grabbed, everyone was like, it's done. It's over. Commentator said it. Everyone at home thought it. His squeeze must be insane. And of course, we've heard Dustin Poirier talked about this. We've heard DC talk about this. That's the kind of worry that I had for Armin if he got into a similar position as he did with Charles Oliveira twice in their previous fight. If Islam got Armin in that position, there was no getting out. And we just saw that with Renato. I think it would have been more of a competitive fight. But in the end, I think we would have seen the same result.
You know what? And I feel for Renato, right? Because
same.
I feel like he was on the right trajectory. Mm. He was heading into the right direction to build up to a title fight because his arm's just about cleared out of the division at this point.
Yep.
Right? Like, so, and Moicano was starting to really pick up some steam. He was starting to get those high-level fights. He was starting to get, like, his win streak was back. And he was looking better and better. You know, I think Dariush would have put him in a really good position to have a camp for Islam. Whereas now he was kind of thrown in unexpected, thrown in rushed, you could say. Like, yeah, he had a camp, but not for Islam. Like, the levels are different.
Yeah.
And, you know, like he said it in his post interview, he may not get another chance. Like, obviously, you got to take these opportunities when they present themselves, but it feels for Moicano because he's been in the game for so long as well.
Yeah, so let's talk about that a little bit. I've watched a few interviews now that broke down how it happened. So, Armin, it was after the press conference that he had this, you know, back spasm or sciatic nerve issue come up, and it really started getting worse as he was cutting weight, right? And then it was the night before, at midnight actually, they call up Hinato and they're like, Hinato, we need you to make championship weight. Don't weigh in at 156. It was Hunter, I think. Don't weigh in at 156. We need you to weigh in at 155. Hinato asked, hey, are they pulling out? Is this I'm pulling out? Is Armin pulling out? No, we just need you to weigh in as a backup just in case, right? And then it was early in the morning the next day where they were like, you're going to be the one fighting. So it was so, so soon. And as you said, bro, like he didn't get to train for Islam. It was a completely different camp training for Benil. And because it was such a last minute change and someone, I think he's ranked 10th, going up and fighting the best pound for pound fighter in the world, It is hard not to feel for him because ultimately he saved the bloody card.
Yep. You know, and hats off to Islam. Like you said, like best pound for pound, right? Taking on all comers, day of, doesn't care, you know. And, you know, that's what makes him so good. That's what being the number one pound for pound means. That's what, you know, is going to get him as the best lightweight to have ever done it.
But, speaking of, man, talking about best lightweights, I have it written here, right? So I would argue that now Islam is the best lightweight ever. 15 win streak, which is the second longest in history behind Anderson Silva, and now the most title wins ever in lightweight. Would you put him at that number one position above everyone else, above the likes of Khabib and everyone in lightweight history? What do you reckon?
Yeah, definitely. You know, like right now. The problem is like we need to see him keep going to keep doing it. Obviously, I think like statistically, he is the best lightweight to have done it right now. But, you know, if he loses that bubble that pops, you know what I mean? That aura disappears. That's why it was so good for Khabib to get out and just not succumb to anything else because his bubble never popped.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But Islam's doing what he did, but going further with it, you know, taking it as far as it can go. And honestly, I'm excited to see where he takes it.
It's such an interesting position now where the lightweight division finds itself because Dana White pretty much said in the post-fight press conference that Armour's not getting the shot, right? Armour's not getting it. I don't know. I can't say for sure whether he seemed upset, but obviously it was a last-minute change. Dana said Armour's not getting it. He's going to have to work his way back up, which puts it to question who Islam could fight next. I mean, yes, Charles Oliveira is right there, just came off the win with Michael Chandler, but Islam's beaten before in a title fight as well, and quite convincingly. So do you have him fight Charles Oliveira as a rematch? Do you just go back and rebook the Armin fight because Armin also beat Charles Oliveira and he earned his shot at that stage? Or do we wait and see what happens with Shavkat and Bilal, and if Shavkat beats Bilal, then finally Islam moves up and fights with the double belt? I don't know what we do here because I do feel for Armin, but I get where the UFC and Dana is coming from saying you lost your opportunity.
I saw a rumor Armin was asking for Oliveira again for over five rounds.
Here's the thing. He was like, if I can't get that title opportunity, I understand. And credit to him, what? He's actually handling this very well. He's like, I'll take on Charles five rounds. I'll take on Michael Chandler five rounds.
Why Charles? Leave Charles alone, dude.
You know why? Because people still question his win over Charles because it was so close. He did get caught a couple of times. And everyone always says if it was a five-rounder, Charles would have won. I think that's the reason why it makes so much sense.
Yeah. I would love to see Charles get that rematch. You know? Same. But I think we see Islam move up. I hope he goes up because he's all about legacy. He's all about, you know, breaking new ground. And I see him going up and fighting those dudes because honestly, him a little bigger, who beats him up there? I can see him having some hard fights. Maybe not. I don't know.
He just won't fight Bilal, brother. That's the problem. Like they're friends, they're brothers, they train with each other. Bilal has said Islam, and this is his exact words that he just walked through me. Like, I don't think Islam would do that to Bilal, given how close they are, unless Bilal loses. But that was the main event. Obviously, Islam Makhachev, congratulations to you, brother. Very, very impressive victory. But next up, Rob, I'm just going to say this. You were right. Literally, what you said word for the co-main event and how it went down was 1,000% correct. Merab Dvalishvili defeats Umar Nurmagomedov by decision over the course of five rounds. What do you think of the fight, man?
I think it was a highlight of this card. I think it was one of the most technical fights to date. Like, it was such a good watch. And honestly, like, I did my predictions. You know, yes. I said what I said. But there's a lot of times I run that kind of train of thought and I get let down. Colby Covington, every time.
I remember.
I wanted, like, I pre, what, pre-Usman, like, mm-hmm. that Colby, right? That Energizer Bunny Colby that was doing as much as Marab, but spamming even more takedowns, right? Like that, the fight he did against RDA, the output was next level. I was there and I'll never forget it. It was inhuman. Okay, that's what I wanted to see when he was fighting everybody else. But I don't know what it was. The wick got shorter and his third lung disappeared at some point. Okay, and yeah, it's gone. Now, same thing with Marab. I was like, I want to see him just – he's put all his stock into stamina, mm-hmm. into stamina and wrestling. Like, I want to see him weaponize it the way he has. And Umar kind of hybridizes, might get tired, okay? Doesn't put as much stock, doesn't weaponize his cardio as much as he is because I think technically, skill set-wise, Umar is the better fighter, mm-hmm. okay? But then Marab goes in and does what Marab does.
Oh.
Okay, because it was so good to see. He would just crash into Umar, make it a dogfight, shoot. Crash, make it a dogfight, shoot. And, you know, I saw the hand of Umar. He hurt his hand.
He broke his hand. He did.
He broke his hand.
Yeah.
Now, how that changed the fight, I don't know, okay? But we're looking at the fight that happened on the weekend. Mm-hmm. Marab was just resilient. You know, I gave Umar probably rounds one, round two. And I said that.
I
said Marab was going to start catching him later on. He's got to invest heavy mm-hmm. for the later rounds. And that's exactly what he did. It was so good to see.
It was such a fun, bloody fight. And I'm eating a bit of humble pie here, and I think a lot of others are as well. Marab proved a lot of us wrong. You know, I said that
not
I
me. Believe.
Yeah, no, not you. But from my perspective,
didn't prove me wrong.
I said I think Umar's the better striker. I think he can match him in the wrestling and all that kind of stuff. And I don't know if Marab could do what he did against the likes of Sean O'Malley, et cetera, right? But then he pulls out a third lung. And he keeps going and going. And after the fight, you think back in hindsight, why the hell did I ever doubt this dude? He's an absolute machine. We need to put him in a science lab and study him. His cardio is unheard of, bro. It was insane how he just kept going. And you saw Umar in the fourth and the fifth rounds, just he had no answers. He was like, what the hell is happening? He was breathing heavily. He was all out of luck. And Marab was toying with him, like we saw in the Cejudo fight and even bits in the Sean O'Malley fight when he kissed him on the back and whatnot. He was like taunting him and pointing and doing that. It was hilarious. It was great to watch. I freaking loved it.
I think Marab needs to work on his showboating a little bit. Like it's terrible showboating, okay?
It's Marab all over. I love it. I love it.
Like, you know what's funny? He's like... I mean, you know how, like, remember Triple C? It was Cejudo. He was like really trying to own the cringe.
Yeah.
Okay. But it looked to me like he was trying too hard, right? Marab is just straight cringe naturally. Like, you can tell he doesn't mean it to come across the way it does.
No.
But it's so bad. Everything he does. And you got to love him for it, right? You got to love him for it. I thought the wrestling exchanges between Marab and Umar were some of the best we've seen in UFC, period.
Yeah.
Umar. The wrestling defense Umar was displaying in rounds four and five even were next level. Like he, technically speaking, Umar, I don't think there is a higher skilled guy in that division than Umar.
Right.
And Marab just said, screw your technique. and like just crashed into him and then like just – weaponize his stamina, his cardio, and just double down on his wrestling. Granted, Marab's own like MMA wrestling is next level.
Yeah.
But oh man, I just love to see it. I love to see it. You know, and these are the sort of fights we see on paper where you're like, well, Umar should win, right? But that's not how fights happen. And or like the same piece of paper you're looking at, you think, hold on, Marab has outgassed everybody and he should just keep spamming takedowns and he'll win. You know what I mean? It's like that's not how fights happen or take place. But I'm so happy That's exactly what we saw happen.
I messaged you, bro, and I was like, you're right. This guy's an energizer bunny.
I just love him. I'm Team Marab. Like he's just fun to watch. I love a guy that just put all his stat points in stamina, man, weaponized it.
But you know what's most interesting about Marab now? Like, we've talked about this before. He had to go the hard route to get to the title. He had to have like 10 wins or 11 wins or whatever it was. He's already beaten everyone in the division. He's beaten now Umar and handed him his first defeat ever in his career. Sean O'Malley, Henry Cejudo, Piotr Jan. The one person, I don't believe that he's fought Figgy, but Figgy obviously just lost recently. Who the hell does he fight? Do you book him against Sean?
I don't.
And what do you think is going to happen differently in that fight?
What do you do? Like, everyone's just expecting him. Like, everyone's just worried he's going to get knocked out like early in the fight before the guy gets started. That's what everyone is kind of like waiting for or scared of. Mm-hmm. But I've seen an improvement in his aversion to getting hit in his last few fights. With that Sean fight, he didn't come close to getting chinned. Okay, because post that, he was getting dropped in just about every fight before that. He got rocked or dropped, right?
Cejudo, Marias,
Sean, and the last fight, he took some damage, but it wasn't as bad, you know, as it could have been.
You know,
I'm very excited to see where he goes. I want to see him just doing his thing. You know, and you know what? You know what is so. What's the word, like, good as well, is the relationship between him and Sterling.
Oh, I love it, man.
Dude, it is such a heartwarming thing to see. Like, he was in Sterling's corner the whole way. Yep. Wouldn't fight his mate, was just in his back, was just in his corner doing his thing, would fight everybody that Sterling wasn't fighting, right?
Yeah.
And now they've switched roles and they're doing the same thing. Like, it's just touching, dude. I love seeing that in the sport.
It's
so
good.
Humanity, man.
Yeah. There was this photo of Aljamain just like looking at Marab doing an interview in the background after his fight, just smiling. Even Marab in the post-fight press conference, he was asked, do you think you're the greatest bantamweight? And he's like, no, Aljamain is, Dogman de Cruz, and then it would be him. It's so bloody wholesome, man. I agree. I love the relationship between the two. And you know what? What better training partner than Aljamain bloody Sterling? Do you know what I mean? Yeah, with his wrestling prowess,
I'd love to see Pete Cruz as Pete Marab.
Oh, that'd be so good, man. We can't turn back the clock, though.
Oh, no.
Can I pose, before we stop talking about this, can I pose you one hypothetical? I've talked about how Pantoja, of any other champion, maybe now Islam, bloody deserves to go up in weight and fight for a double belt. Pantoja versus Marab, would you like to see that?
Like,
who else is Pantoja fight, right? Who else is Marab fight? It could be good.
I love Pantoja. Marab murders him.
All right. If
Pantoja goes up to Marab, Marab murders him.
Fair.
Bad.
Okay. All right. I agree that Marab wins.
I like Pantoja. Like, he's won me over a lot, and I think he's killed the division.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think Marab's where his double belt lies.
Fair enough. Well, look, let's see what happens next. Very excited. But you know what? Umar's going to be back. I still believe that one day he can become champion, but maybe it's just Marab is his Achilles heel. However, we're not done yet. Next fight we have to talk about is Jiří Procházka against Jamahal Hill. Jiří Procházka TKOs him in the third round. Very exciting fight, bro. What did you think of it?
Dude, it was a great fight. It was a great fight to see. Jiří was having some, like, his head movement is uncanny.
He improved it. He really improved, right?
Did he, though?
He did, a little bit.
Like, I don't know. Like, it's so exaggerated in some ways.
But he's got
such long arms that he can just throw, like, a left straight or a right straight from just about any angle. And you saw him slipping left, hitting Hill with his left hand. Mm-hmm. Over and over again, like, you saw him really hurt him in that first round, and obviously finish him and start to damage him in the last round.
Yeah,
it was Yeah, I don't know. Like, Jamal Hill, is that the same Hill we saw fight Glover? Is that the same Hill we saw fight Walker and everybody else? Because I think I'm starting to think that Hill might be a real momentum sort of guy. You know, there are some real momentum fighters that once they get some steam and their confidence is at a high, they almost will winning into their into reality. You know what I mean? Because they, it's like when Hendricks was walking around, Johnny Hendricks walking around just knocking people out with his left hand. I feel like the momentum and the confidence that he had in that created the story for that to happen more often, right? And then once he got beat, everyone started beating him. Does it make sense what I'm kind of...
No, it does make sense. It does.
Like, this isn't... I'm just like spitballing here, right? This isn't anything. But I feel like Hill's kind of suffered a little bit in his confidence from that Pereira fight. All the media that's gone around post the Pereira fight, him being so caught up in all that, how doesn't that affect your psyche? How doesn't that affect your mental state, right? And then to go up against Jiří, you know what I mean? And he's had to deal with some injuries. I'm sure, I think he got hurt again post Pereira, but like he's been dealing with injuries.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I felt like we saw a Jamal Hill that wasn't, you know, the same one as a few years back. It wasn't the guy that was untouchable that was knocking people out. I feel like he was a bit gun-shy, you know, a bit worried. And that happens when you get knocked out.
Mm.
You get gun-shy. You get worried about it happening again, you know. Whereas Jiří, we saw the same Jiří, you know. We saw Jiří that came in ready to die. And I don't know. I like both guys, but I'm so happy to see Jiří pick a win after. Like, he was shattered after that second Pereira loss. Like, he had lost his way a bit. But
I will say this, man. I did think he improved his defense a little. Like, he still Jiří'd himself into a victory ultimately in the end, right? But I thought his head movement was improved. He wasn't just like using his face to, you know, block punches and then just forcing himself into a situation where he could win. His head movement, yes, it's exaggerated because he's so bloody tall and awkward. But I thought he was doing better in that department. Hill, what I found, especially in that first round. He was and the third. He was just swinging wildly, and I thought there's going to be a time where Jiří's just going to duck and he's going to drop you if you keep swinging like that. Well, and it happened. Well, and that's exactly how
he wasn't really setting anything up. There weren't any feints. You know, he wasn't utilizing his legs super effectively. He wasn't he wasn't kind of setting up those big bursts of energy when he would come in.
Yeah, yeah. I will say this though, and I want to give credit to Hill. It was a very fun fight. I actually thought that he won the second round. So if you really break it down, it was one apiece going into it. And then obviously what happened in the third round happened. Mm-hmm. I still want to give him full credit. And he's also taken this loss way better than he took the loss against Alex Pereira. They shared a drink afterwards in the bar. Talk about wholesome moments. They shared a drink afterwards in the bar. He seemed really crushed and he hasn't gone online and said anything. So you know what? Kudos to him. He put on a real fun show. I'm very happy that Jiří won, but I do hope that this is a moment for Hill to learn and to be again another top contender in that division. He still is a top contender. Unfortunately, he just fought the guy, Jiří, that is beating everyone else bar from Alex Pereira. Should he fight Alex next? What do you reckon?
Who? Jiří?
Jiří.
For a third fight?
This is the thing, man. This is and it was obviously Pereira is going to fight Magomed Ankalaev next. And when he was asked the question after the fight, he kind of like begrudgingly and reluctantly said, I just want to fight Alex Pereira. And I get it. He knows that he probably doesn't deserve it, quote unquote, because he's lost twice to him. But who does he fight next to earn that opportunity?
The light heavyweight division in the top five is like, I feel like it's shallow.
It's in a weird spot. Like,
Yeah, I feel like there's big gaps in levels as well, like across the guys in the top 10.
Mm-hmm.
It is in a weird spot, but Jiří seems like the sort of guy that will just hunt Pereira until he retires. I'm here for it. I want that.
Oh, dude.
You
know?
But I'd love to see it again. Healing both guys, like, what more do you want in a fight? Both guys put, like, correct. You saw their heart, they wore their hearts on their sleeve, you know what I mean? And it was a good fight.
Yeah, it was a good fight. They put on a show. But also, there were some other good performances as well. I have given him crap before in the past, but let's talk about Jalton Almeida, TKO in Sergey Spivak in the first round. Jalton Almeida, man, look, there are some fights that I think he just like mounts people and he doesn't do much, but ultimately he got the job done against Spivak. What do you think?
He just did what Almeida does.
Yeah.
He gets you to your back. And you know what? I'll give it to him. Wasn't looking for submissions. Wasn't really going for submissions. He was just he knew he needed a TKO to try and silence, you know, the noise, silence the haters.
Yeah.
Like you. But
I said it once and then he performed well previously and I gave him credit.
And he did it. You know what I mean? And he did it. So good on Jalton Almeida.
Yeah, yeah. I also worry and I question the depth of the heavyweight division as well. Obviously, John Jones, you know, Tommy Aspinall, let's figure that out. But where does a Jalton Almeida, how does he stack up? You know what I mean? He lost to Blades, and Blades obviously lost to Tommy Aspinall. Should it be him against, what's his name? Against Garn? Maybe?
Oh, Volkov? I'd love to see Almeida. I'd love to see Almeida versus Garn.
Dude, they're both athletic, strong.
There's only two ways that fight goes.
Yeah.
Either Almeida gets Garn on his back, and that's where he stays for the next 10 years. Or Almeida gets sent to the Shadow Realm.
But that's a great result. That's awesome to see.
Yeah, dude. I know, for both outcomes. I want to see that stuff, dude.
No, good on him. And finally, on the main card, Reinier de Rita submits Kevin Holland in the first round. Not too much to say about this. I'm not too sure what's going on with Kevin Holland recently, but a good performance from Derrida.
So average.
Don't have to say it like that. Call me a hater.
What do you want me to say, dude? Like, he just time and time again keeps doing, like, the same thing keeps happening. The same thing. The same thing.
You're right. I just didn't want to say it like that.
I don't
that.
Know what
You're
else right. I can say. Like, that's it. That's as much a good on those guys. I don't know.
I'll tell you
that's
this.
That's all I've got. Like, what else do you want?
you don't need a comment on this, but Reinier did say that maybe he'd like to fight you in the future.
Me?
Yeah. He said he dropped
Why
your
me?
Name. Yeah.
What did
he say? Fuck me for nothing. You're in his division. That's the only thing.
Oh man, there's a lot of other dudes to fight. He picks me.
I don't think a fight with you is the right choice. No, but
I'll belt him when he's in the area.
And that was UFC 311. Our reactions to the main card. Obviously, there are a bunch of other fights, but we have a pretty stacked episode this episode, Rob. The next thing that I want to talk about, it seems like... do you need to go to the bathroom, by the way, before we talk?
No, I'm good. I'm good.
You're good. Rob, it seems like you have a new best friend. Is that right? You in Israel.
Oh, yeah.
Adesanya. What happened there? Tell me the backstory. Like, you mentioned to me that you were going to New Zealand before it was out in the open. You were going to go train at City Kickboxing, but I didn't know the extent of it. I didn't know the extent that you were going to meet Israel and do some light sparring and do a video with him on his podcast. Tell me all about it. How'd it go down?
Yeah, well, it wasn't like a me decision, like just a me decision. It was so with my main training partner Jacob out because he's injured at the moment, and then a couple of guys retiring because they're finding new paths and whatnot. The bodies we have here right now are limited. So we, me and my coaches and the team sat down, we started racking our brains on where we can go. Fortunately, I have good relations and rapport with just about the entire world. So we could go to the US, we could do this, but they're so far away. And then like a lightning bolt, like, wow, City Kickboxing is two and a half hours away by flight. And they've got Izzy, middleweight, Carlos, light heavy, and a bunch of other middleweights and guys in between that, you know, are in the same body count, right? And mate, it just made sense. It made sense. And realistically, the chances of me and Izzy fighting again is slim. You know what I mean? He doesn't have the belt. We've fought twice already.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, like, we're like, screw it, let's just reach out. So my coach reached out to Eugene, mm-hmm. and they got talking, and yeah, organized a date. We went over just for, it was a short stint, 4 or 5 days, and yeah, we went into the gym, met the guys, and just started doing some training. You know, I just slid into their sessions, and yep. Did some work there, worked on some things. Izzy asked me if I could go on his cast, and I jumped on that because why not? Let's break bread, right?
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
And then, granted, I thought he was trying to poison me at one stage, but we got over that miscommunication. Okay. And yeah, you know, I'm glad we started that relationship, you know. Like, yeah. I'm still doing most of my training in Australia, but mm-hmm. to be able to go over there and their boys come over here, or if they ever need me, or if I need them, you know, to have that relationship, that rapport with a team that is so, you know, well made, and yeah. with the bodies that they have, yeah, it's just great. I think it's great because it's kind of always been Australia, New Zealand, you know, against the world, right? Because we're. That's just how we are, especially for myself. I'm glad to have gone back over and taken back some of my fan base.
I feel you. But you mentioned before, you know, talking about Aljamain and Merab, wholesome moments. This has to be one of the more wholesome moments in the UFC. You and Israel were rivals for so long, fighting at the top of the division. To see you two break bread on the video, talking with each other, sharing funny moments, that macho moment, has been shared around, or I can't stop laughing at it every time it pops up in my feed. Honestly, bro, it put a smile on my face. It was just good to see. It was just fun.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm good. I'm glad. You know, I went over there. We, you know, we hashed everything out, and we're nice. You know, we're both going to be better for it.
For sure. I mean, this is like, we've talked about this in the lightweight division before. Middleweight is at a very similar spot in time where you've got a lot of hungry up-and-comers that are chomping at the door. Israel obviously is about to fight Nassourdine Imavov. You've got Caio Bahio. Like, mm-hmm. you are the established fighters that have been at the top of the division for so long, and they're now effectively looking to quote-unquote take your spot. I can get why you and Izzy, because you said this on a video that, you know, you don't see yourself fighting Izzy anymore. I'm sure Izzy feels the same way. This is the next step in the middleweight division. It's cool. It's cool to see.
Definitely. It's like the old guard getting together.
100%. This is like, you know, you remember, you know, Fazeev going up against Gaethje and the other fights that took place, you know, Dustin Poirier against Benoit Saint-Denis in lightweight. This could be a very similar moment for the middleweight division. I'm all for it, bro.
Yeah. Yeah. So am I. So I'm glad. Yeah. I'm happy.
Yeah, and also as well, I just want to thank Izzy and his family and his brother. We shared that clip on our channel as well, so go check out Izzy's channel. Go check out Stylebender. We really do appreciate it. But next up, bro, last bit of UFC news. I want to get your thoughts on these UFC 313 and fight announcements that were announced during the UFC 311 card. We finally have it confirmed. It's happening. Alex Pereira against Magomed Ankalaev for the light heavyweight title. And in the co-main, Justin Gaethje against Dan Hooker in a 5-round co-main event. Oh, that sounds so good. But Rob, what do you think about these two fights?
Well, Alex Pereira and Ankalaev, man, they don't like each other. I love the story that's getting built around it.
Yeah.
I don't know. A lot of people are saying Ankalaev is like going to take him down and bash him. He's going to be like his kryptonite. Mm. But man, I don't know. Maybe they're seeing something I'm not. Like, his striking is nowhere near a Pereira's level. And his takedowns aren't that good. You know what I mean? Like, he's got grappling, but I don't – like, he's not a – yeah. I don't know. And you can only imagine Pereira's been practicing with Glover in his corner for since day dot. Right, but I don't know. We'll do a proper breakdown when we get closer to the date for that one,
for sure.
But Gaethje Hooker,
there we go.
Oh my goodness! Oh my goodness! Like, let me just get it out of the way. Like,
neither
one of these guys wins that fight. You know what I mean, dude? Like, neither one
They're
of those.
They're both gonna get destroyed.
The only winner of that fight is gonna be. Everyone sitting on the couch watching it, like
us.
That is going to be such a barn burner that I cannot wait. I cannot wait. Like I said, we'll break it down closer to the date, but right now, as of this moment, that's the most hyped fight for this year for me.
It's such a perfect fight to make, right? Like Hooker coming up to fight with Mateusz Gamrot. He absolutely deserved something like this. And Justin Gaethje, yes, he suffered that knockout against Max Holloway, but he's still bloody Justin Gaethje. If he doesn't take that fight, in an alternate reality, he probably still went on to fight Islam Makhachev for the title, right? If he beats Dan Hooker, that's the problem solved. Islam against Justin Gaethje. That's I didn't even think about that before, but that could easily happen, right? I know we don't want to break it down a little bit, but are we supporting our fellow Anzac, Dan Hooker? Is that what we're doing?
Oh, definitely. I told you. Yeah. I've told everyone. I'm so biased with all my things. All my picks, all my predictions, all my breakdown. I'm biased. Whatever.
Hell yeah. I did want to say as well, by the way, you were mentioning like you don't know whether Ankalaev is going to be able to take down Alex Pereira. Look, Ankalaev has said that he just wants to stand there and trade with Alex. If he does that, in my opinion, he's getting knocked out. And I think out of desperation, he's going to go for takedowns.
Yeah, you know? Man, that'd be even worse. Like, he's not standing with Pereira, period.
No one is. No one is, man.
No.
Yeah.
Nope.
But those are all the UFC announcements. That is the UFC news for this podcast. And let's move on to the gaming segment. Rob, in the past week, we have a brand new announcement. The biggest piece of news for the week is that the Nintendo Switch 2 has finally been announced. This thing was leaked God knows how many times. It's finally been announced by Nintendo. It's due out this year, probably later this year after June. Larger screen, larger Joy-Cons. The strap is magnetic as opposed to the little rail thing, so that's going to be cool to see. Apparently, you can use the little Switch Joy-Con as a mouse, potentially. They kind of showed that off a little bit in the video. It's also going to be backwards compatible, so it's going to be able to play physical and digital Nintendo Switch games. Not all of them. There will be some ones that, just for certain reasons here or there, that they won't be able to work on the Switch 2, but it seems like the majority of games are going to be backwards compatible, plus exclusive Switch 2 games. What do you think, Rob?
Mate, the only game worth playing on the Switch is Super Smash Bros.
Don't say the only game. Right. Don't be like that. The only game worth playing is Super Smash Bros.
And if you aren't playing it, what are you doing? Okay? If you're playing any other game than Smash Brothers, like, again, what are you doing?
Mario Kart, Zelda, Super Mario. Stop it. Stop it.
That's all you got to do. Mario, Zelda. Come on, dude.
Some of the greatest games of all time. Are you crazy? What are you talking about?
You got Smash Bros. Is the way, man. Like, it's Smash Life, brother.
You're such a UFC fighter, bro. Freaking Smash is the only game for me.
Super Smash Brothers is sick, man. No
I agree.
Items, lives, like no specials. You just punch on and it is awesome.
Wait, hold on. Are you one of those guys that take away power-ups and everything? You just straight...
Of course.
What do you mean,
of course? How can you say you're playing... How can you say you're fighting if you're like little Super Saiyan crap going around?
That's the point of Smash Bros. That's why it's fun. Nah, all the power-ups, the hammer, everything.
Nah, the items. Oh, yuck.
Just such a sweaty gamer, bots. Bro. Freaking hell. Well, look, if there was an exclusive Switch 2 Super Smash Brothers, you're buying it, right? You're buying the Switch 2 for sure.
Without doubt. I'll buy the Switch 2 just for the new Smash Brothers, which they will release.
For sure. For sure. I think they were teasing Mario Kart, but for sure that's going to come at some stage.
Mario Kart.
Oh, don't do that. Your kids will play Mario Kart and they'd love it.
Yeah,
they'd play it more than you.
I don't know. Maybe.
they don't play the Nintendo Switch? They don't play Mario Kart or anything?
No, because they keep losing on the Joy-Cons. Like, and it's not like... Yeah, it's like the Switch is like our portable gaming device. So like we take it away on holiday or when we're in there in the planes and whatnot. I'm going to have to probably go buy some more because we got a big flight coming up. But
then
they end up losing the games. They end up losing the controllers. It's just, it's a bit of a nightmare. So, you know, if we had one kid with the Switch, it'd be all right. But
No, I get that. And that's the one thing with the Switch too that I'm a little, I'll say cautious about is that it's a magnetic connection and not the rail. Apparently, there's a little button that somehow detaches the magnet. I don't know how exactly it works, but I worry that kids getting their hands on it and consistently like putting it on and taking it off and throwing it around like they do, I worry about the integrity of these magnets and whether they're going to last. They might. I might be proven wrong. That's the one thing that I'm a little, you know.
Do magnets demagnetize? I don't know if that's a thing.
I think they can. It's less about the demagnetize, but it's more there's a connector there that looks very awkward and long and skinny. Now, Nintendo, to their credit, look at their previous consoles. My freaking Game Boy Advance still works. So I might be talking absolute nonsense here. That's the one thing people are a little bit worried about.
Yeah.
But that was the Nintendo Switch 2 announcement. Let us know what you think in the comments below. Let's move on to what we're watching, playing, and reading. Rob, have you been doing anything this week? And that's amazing.
Brother, I haven't. I haven't.
Come on, at all. Rob.
Still no games. This year, no games. Danada. But I found a game I want to play.
Oh, yeah? Say it.
Yeah. I'm going to play Cyberpunk 77 with a ton of real-life difficulty mods.
That's why you were asking me about Nexus mods, Jin.
Yeah. Because I found this like Reddit page where it's like real-life difficulty and simulation mods for Cyberpunk.
Yeah.
Like you'll die within two shots. Like, and a headshot will kill you one go. And if like I have to eat and drink to survive, dude, that just sounds mad. I'm gonna life sim Cyberpunk 77. So like, I'm just gonna be like another pedestrian. You know what I mean? there's a gang war going on nearby. I have to take cover. You know, like every other civilian. Oh, you know, it just feels funny saying it like that. I can't wait.
It sounds funny too. Can't you just play the bloody game normally? You're gonna spend hours modding it and not play.
Got to get a job, earn enough money to get a loan for a car, get the car, get it blown up, dude. Lose it. You know what I mean? Like those. It's gonna be like the little wins. I can't wait. Yeah, but that's assuming I can work it out though, because like I was asking you just a second ago how they work Nexus mods.
I've got to help you with it. I will say, though, it sounds like you might be interested in GTA 6 whenever it bloody comes out, right?
I like GTA, but like they never let you create your own character except for online. And online GTA is kind of just how you go.
Fair. You never got into it?
I did, and then I bought a bunch of whale cards.
Shark cards.
Yeah, dude. And then I just had tanks and like the mobile homes, like the mobile base of operations.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just kind of like, I killed it for myself. Like there's no need to do missions or anything.
No.
Like, yeah, you know what I mean? But I'm not grinding out these crappy missions for 10 days either.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's in a funny place for me.
I get it, man. Like, and it's kind of what I'm going through with TCG Pocket. I'm still playing it, obviously. But sometimes I don't want to wait 2 weeks before I can open the packs that I want. I have the money. I have some disposable income. Why the hell not? I spent almost $300 on that bloody game. I know that's probably overkill. But dude, I feel you.
You got to play Magic. You'll have to get a second job to pay for Magic.
No, absolutely. There's no way I'm getting into Magic. My friends are trying to get me into it. I think it's going to be a big money sink and a time sink, and I won't have time for anything else.
Oh, huge. Time, not too bad, but money, definitely.
Is it worth it? Is it worth spending that amount of money on it?
If you like card games, it's the best card game on the market. Always has been, always will be. It is wild. And if you like seasons as well, because they do seasonal deck drops and like the new packs and stuff like that usually bring in like a new mechanic that everyone has to kind of build around.
Yeah.
In the next season to like start playing ranked and stuff like that. Yep. So it's fun. But dude, I just start sinking cash into it because I'm like, oh man, that looks like such a because I love jank builds. I love jank builds. Yeah. Like But the jank builds are usually the most expensive. I'll build it and then I'll find a new jank build that someone's playing online. I'll be like, man, I want to run that deck. And then I'll buy that deck. And then I'll find a new one online. I'll be like, man, I want that deck. You know what I mean? I've spent probprobably about $3,500 on Magic.
Oh my God. Are you serious?
Yeah.
That's nuts. That's insane. Yeah.
You don't need to, though. Like, I've got a mate that happily just tries to build decks out of the free cards, and he gets pretty far. Like, there's almost always a red rush deck you can build out of the starter decks, which gets you to mythic. But
it just seems like a slog to do it without buying. like seriously and buying individual cards.
You can't
play
the way you want to play, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. But I, similarly with you, Rob, I haven't had much time to play because at work for the past week, we've been launching a game called Age of Darkness Final Stand. I don't know if you ever actually played it. It's kind of like a, similar to They Are Billions, it's a dark fantasy survival RTS. You're controlling an army, defending against hordes of nightmares. We added a multiplayer. There's a single player, like a campaign mode. There's a survival mode as well. So we've been launching that. It's been doing really well, man. Like we just cracked like 6,000 concurrents. It's been out for almost a week now. So that's been one that I've been playing, helping launch. It's actually really cool. I've missed being a part of video game launches, man. There's an energy in the room. And honestly, bro, if you've ever like been into RTSs, especially They Are Billions, it's the best comparison there. I think you might actually enjoy Age of Darkness, especially because it's a tough game. And I know how much you like tough games.
It's in my library.
Well, there you go. There you go.
I don't know how.
You should give it a go. If you have the time to do some survival runs or even co-op if you haven't made to jump in with. Do it, man.
My son. I'll play with my son.
Will you? If you actually do, please let me know because that would be pretty sick. I'll tell the team that.
Get me a key and I'll do it for my son.
I will send you a key. Okay, done.
Yes.
Deal.
Look how cheap I am, dude. Like, that's where I draw the line.
Rob Whittaker, UFC middleweight.
Like, that's where I draw the line. You know?
If I'll send you a key if you play with your son and talk about it, all right? That's the deal.
Yeah, done.
All right?
Done.
Deal.
Because I love jumping. He loves those sort of games.
Like, yeah.
We Are Billions, They Are Billions. It's a bit hard for him. I bought it for him, but it's a bit hard. Okay. Dude, it's hard for me. Like I get such a mad economy running, and then I realize that in the back corner, there's a huge swarm that's just snuck into my base somehow.
Like, yeah.
It's bullshit, but.
Well, look, AOD will have those moments. It depends on the map that you spawn on, but you can lower the difficulty, Rob. I know ego and your pride, but you can do it if you want to.
Dude, you know? See, like when I'm playing Helldivers with my son, I still have it on like level 8. Like, yeah.
7 is the sweet spot, bro. 8 is a bit.
Well,
much.
I'm just trying to get as high as like, I want to get to Helldiver, like Super Helldiver, it's called.
Yeah.
But
I could help you out, man. He's just
got a trial by fire. Like, you should see him. He just runs in, gets killed. Runs in, get killed. Over and over. No, but I still can't play it, man. I still can't play Helldivers. Otherwise, I'd be playing it because it still bricks my PC.
We'll figure out what's going on with your PC. It might be a Helldivers 2 issue, but I reckon a reset will do the job.
It definitely is. It doesn't do anything. Like, I don't get anything like that with any other game. It's only like when certain scenes happen, like when the drop pods get fired out of the ship.
Yep.
Or when I'm on the map screen and I pull out of the map, it's weird.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's see if we can figure out what's going on there. But as always, the last segment, viewer questions. If you have any questions for the viewer question segment, let us know in the comments below. But first up, we kind of touched on this, Rob, but I want to get a definitive answer from you, from Don Yang 8173. Is there a chance you will fight Izzy again in the future?
No, I don't fight people I eat with.
Good answer. I liked hearing that. Next question is from at Nathan Winning 8331. Rob, have you read Red Rising yet? That was a tongue twister. I feel like you'll love it.
Red Rising. Let me have a look.
I want to throw some like book questions in there and novel questions in there here and there because it's always hard when someone's like, "Have you played this game? Have you played that game? Or read this book?" Because if we say no,
that's about this. Sorry. I got excited.
I got excited for you. Damn.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I have. That's the one where they're on Mars and they're slaves. Yeah, I have. That's a really good book. Really good book. Good. I think it's a trilogy, isn't it? But yeah, no, I did. You know, and it was such a left field from the genre I usually jump on. I usually jump on sci-fi books. I mean, like spacey books, but that was cool. It was really cool.
Yeah, nice. Well, the next question, I'm really intrigued on your answer on this. I loved it. At Logan, KOFOD 6815, bloody hell. Don't change the podcast. It's already fantastic. Thank you, brother. Question for Rob and Johnny. What does the flow state mean to you, either in fighting or gaming? Rob, in fighting, what is the flow state? What is it to you?
It's like that time in terms of gaming. It's that it's okay. Let's just use Elden Ring. It's like when you fight a boss and you've just been pumped for about 4 to 5 hours that day, and you close it up, switch it off, throw the controller across the room, and go to bed. Okay, the next day you come back and you jump on, and brother, the boss can't hit you.
Yeah,
he just can't hit you. It's like you can see the code, dude. It's just that's the flow state. It's the perfect harmony between your head and your hands and your emotional state.
It's Ultra Instinct Goku. That's really what it is. Like, you cannot get hit. You can do no wrong.
I don't like Ultra Instinct Goku. I don't understand all these new, the point these of the new thing, Super bro. Saiyan stuff. Dude, I don't like this new Dragon Ball. Ultra Instinct, God Goku, Red Goku, Black Goku. I don't understand. It's too much now. It's just they've ruined it for me.
What else are they going to do? You can't be Super Saiyan 3 forever.
Yeah, but you know? Maybe that was enough. You know what I mean?
You reckon they should have ended the series there?
No, I liked GT. I know some people didn't. I liked GT. Don't like this new age stuff, but I thought GT was cool.
GT was pretty... Super Saiyan 4 was pretty badass, I'll admit. It was such a drastic different look.
Do you remember when they became Super Saiyan 4 Gogeta for the first time?
Yeah.
That was so cool because he's an idiot. And he portrayed that. Like, it was mad.
Yeah.
Stupidly strong, but stupid.
Fair. But what about fighting? Like, is there a fight that you've had where you could say I was in the flow state? Because if I was to give an example for you, it would probably be your fight with Ikram Alaskarov. It wasn't a big fight where you could show that over the course of 1, 2, 3, 4 rounds or whatever it is. But you were in the flow state in that moment, 100%.
Yeah, that one. Vittori is probably another one.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's a good shot.
Gaslam was probably another one.
Like, yeah.
There are just times you feel like you're two steps ahead and you just sustain it for the fight.
Nice. And last question. This one made me laugh. At Croak 8272. Hey, Rob and Johnny, love the pod. Serious question. Who wins, 50 duck-sized Robs or one horse-sized Volkanovski? I have my answer. What's your answer, Rob?
How
are you thinking about this seriously?
how are 50 duck-sized Robs working? Like, how? Do you know how big a horse is, dude?
I do, but there's 50 of them. Strength in numbers,
brother. Have you seen a horse run through like a crowd of people? Dude, that's slack to me. Why am I duck-sized? He should be duck-sized.
Well, Volk's already a little smaller than you, so he needs an advantage.
8272, that was bullshit.
I don't think you're giving 50 duck-sized Robs enough credit. There's strength in numbers. They could swarm the horse, you know? They'd be strong.
They couldn't. Have you ever seen ducks swarm a horse, dude?
But it's duck-sized you know?
Horses are ducks big, quacking. Man. Horses are really, really big.
They are. All right. What about a pony-sized Volkanovski? Is that better?
We're getting in. Yeah, that's doable. That's doable. 50 Robs with my IQ.
Yeah.
Pony-sized Volks getting it.
And that was episode 57 of the Ever Barcade podcast. This was a great episode, by the way. I just want to say that. It's Rob, it's fun. As always, closing words, let us know.
I want to say thank you to all our subs. We 31K, that's a massive milestone for us. Thank you very much. And to all the supportive comments and listeners, you know, we've said it again. We're not going to sit here and break down fights diagnostically, you know, like detail by detail, minute by minute. We're just two guys that enjoy the sport. We enjoy games and we want somewhere to talk about it with you guys. And I reading the comments, I see you guys get it. And it warms my heart to see the support that we get and the subscribers and the listeners and the likes still going up. So
hell yeah.
Thank you very much from the bottom of our hearts and take it easy.
Thanks, everyone.